Any more burning questions? Yes.
Hi, I'm Kelsey with West Bank First Nation, and my question is for you. You did the presentation on the adverse events with HPV. You mentioned like the severe reactions, and then you kind of mentioned all the reactions. But how many of those were like the reportable ones? Because it just seems like there's like tons of reactions.
I think we mentioned in my slide we had 91. 144 events among 91 individuals. All of those were reportable in that they were entered through the regular either categoric variables or reported as other severe or unusual in IFES. So they would have all been possible to enter in the paper-based form that you're probably familiar with for reporting of adverse events. So either one of the categories was ticked or the final category, that's other severe or unusual event, was ticked. In a couple of those other severe or unusual events, we had no information provided in that supplementary information field. I think in IFES it's called adverse event comments, and we rely on that to find out what was that other severe or unusual event. And so we're doing case-by-case follow-up of those in order to find out what that event actually was, because that's such a grab bag. In other instances, in many instances, that other severe or unusual event was to us neither severe nor unusual in the case of the flu-like illness that occurred that could have been an intercurrent viral infection with the fever and the myalgia. So as part of our review process, what we've done is reclassified or recoded the events that were reported as other severe or unusual, but also reviewed every single one of the events coded and reported to us from the field already in one of the categories that I mentioned, the anaphylaxis and the neurological events, most notably, because those are the ones of most concern. So if there's anything in the report that suggests that this was really not a case of anaphylaxis, but it was hives, for instance, we would also recode that out of anaphylaxis into an appropriate allergic category. So I hope that's clear. Yes, Paul.
I just want to say Dr. DeWar is trying to get a question in up from the peanut gallery. I do have one afterwards.
Okay, sorry. Mina, you're hiding. Go ahead. Just shout. Evan, can you just paraphrase that for the audience who might not have heard it?
Oh, sure. You had two questions. The first one is, what are the immunization beliefs of First Nations? I'll start with that one. And that one I resisted answering directly because I understand why you might ask that in support of immunization workers. But I'm not meant to be a resource for non-Aboriginal workers. I'm meant to be a resource for Aboriginal people. And so if I put my Aboriginal viewpoint on this, the question sounds like, what is it about your cultural beliefs? What is it about your local behaviors that contribute to your disadvantage? So I understand why, from a political health point of view, you might ask this question, but from an Aboriginal point of view, that question or that inference that there's something about the way that we are that contributes to our dysfunction that makes it difficult to answer. So yes, we do have some beliefs around, you know, we don't like to have biological samples taken. We don't like when institutions approach us because, you know, our historical beliefs are institutions are really not that interested in our well-being. Very often when strangers approach us around vaccinations or vaccination studies that we really need to have more of a personable approach. We don't believe in institutional behaviors. Or the institutional posture, the physician posture, for instance, or the nurse posture. I think that, you know, very often we have beliefs related to infectious diseases of the past that inform the way that we interact now. I think the most important part, though, of our interaction is to keep the Aboriginal point of view, which is that Aboriginal people really are bicultural. I think that the best case scenario is that we do understand the need for clinical trials and for vaccination trials, for vaccination themselves, for and there is a long history of non-Aboriginal workers in Aboriginal communities. Actually, this is like the sixth generation. So we actually do implicitly understand, I think, the sensibility of cooperation. However, I think that when one comes in as a stranger with a particular agenda, then we see once again that it's really not about what we need, it's really about what you need, and so you become second tier in the list of needs. Your need for vaccination information wasn't about a discussion where we placed our vaccination needs on the list. Yours was always at the fore, and that's what dominates the conversation, and thus we won't progress beyond go. And I think that's just the really very simple way to put it. And you'll see lots of distractors like, what about biological specimens that are being taken in your vaccination trial? We're uncomfortable with those being, housed in the pharmaceutical that's running the trial. But that really just means we don't trust you. And we don't trust this agenda. It's not ours. So I think the question around cultural beliefs and practices is actually a moot point. Sorry. Yes. So as far as the second question on engaging in vaccinations and vaccination trials, how do we actually accomplish that? Like with any patient, we really need to stop and listen to them. Aboriginal clients are complex. They take longer. We don't do the shorthand that we do with other patients. So stopping and listening to their concerns and actually engaging in a relationship with them just takes time. And I think in true change management, the first meeting with them wouldn't even involve talking about what our agenda might be. It's really that very first meeting, and maybe even many more, are going to be about what we can do in service to them. That's the simple, short answer. Thanks.
Pam, you've got something to add?
Strangely enough, I think we have much to learn from Finland. And when I have done some work in Finland, and I asked them, how come it's a country of 5 million people, and you have these huge vaccine trials where they sign up 25,000 Finnish newborns to new vaccines, and they responded, well, we have a great primary care system. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, we have great maternal child health primary care systems with midwives, and basically they gain the trust of women during pregnancy and delivery, with the thoughtful midwifery-driven delivery program that's women-centered, and then after that, it's easy that women bring their children in for their childhood care, and there's a big, trust program. I mean, it's and those of you who have worked with midwifery programs in Canada, Pavangnatuk or Fort Smith and elsewhere, say that all that energy that's put into the development of trust with families pays off hugely thereafter, and you start with women's health. So I would say that that if you can build a primary care system that's driven like that, the public health part and the child care will fall into place. And any study that's been done about in First Nations communities in Canada has pointed out what Evan has said, that it's the quality of the interaction between the healthcare worker, hate to use the term, and the patient or the consumer of health, the community person, is primary. It trumps everything. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And sorry, just to add to that, and I think what I was trying to say about integration with the community or having a relationship with the community is really about having a relationship with the community-based workers. I mean, you can't have a community, be interacting with, all of the community members, but you're interacting with the community health system or the primary health care system that's on reserve. And that's the way in. And sometimes in some communities, that primary healthcare system doesn't really exist that well, and so you actually don't have access to them. And I do get approached sometimes, can you help me gain access? But if the issue isn't ranking on the local agenda, then I can't further it as much as I would like to, or at least not without, you know, a supreme effort. So I do think that we can focus on certain communities that will be ready to take on your task, because some of them are. It's just finding the right one. So it's possible. It certainly is possible. So I hope you won't give up in your efforts in working with First Nations. Thanks.
I mean, that's a good final message. So don't give up, but there's still lots of work to be done. I'd like to thank our stellar speakers from this morning. I think all the buzz I heard during the break is that everybody's enjoyed the sessions very much and appreciates the valuable presentations that you gave. And thank you for hanging with us during the question and answer period.